Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election season already, and the August 9th primary is nearly upon us. We've invited the candidates to share their views.
And hopefully I can work with the people in Madison and see if we can't get more of our funds and resources up here to help the residents of the 73rd District out.
Plus, a beloved music professor and composer whose final work was born on a drive from Duluth to Ashland gets a new treatment for orchestra. We'll hear from the musicians premiering it. Those stories and the regional news and review after this. It's election season already, and the August 9th primary is nearly upon us. We've invited the candidates to share their views.
And hopefully I can work with the people in Madison and see if we can't get more of our funds and resources up here to help the residents of the 73rd District out.
Plus, a beloved music professor and composer whose final work was born on a drive from Duluth to Ashland gets a new treatment for orchestra. We'll hear from the musicians premiering it. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. It's election season, and yes, you heard me right. The August 9th primary is nearly upon us. We have two contested primaries in our area, both on the Republican side with candidates for the Wisconsin Assembly. This week, we've invited those vying for the soon-to-be-open seat for the 73rd District, replacing retiring Democratic incumbent Nick Milroy. Next week, we'll hear from the two Republicans looking to fill the 74th district seat. In both races, a single Democratic candidate is unopposed in the primary. The two Republicans vying for the 73rd district seat that stretches from Superior, south and southwest to Webster, are Angie Sapik of Lake Nabagamon, a produce broker working for her family's business, V's Marketing in Superior, and Scott Lustery of Lakeside, a union carpenter who grew up on his family's dairy and beef farm in Maple and is currently a member of the Douglas County Board of Supervisors. Both candidates were invited to participate in a 20-minute debate together on the show or an individual interview of 10 minutes each. Angie Sapik declined our request, so with that, here is our interview with Scott Lustery. Welcome to Simply Superior, Scott Lustery.
Hi, Mr. Washington, and thank you for having me this afternoon.
So let's begin, starting with your opening statement of up to 2 minutes.
All right. My name is Scott Lustery. I live in the town of Lakeside with my wife of 36 years, Vicki. I have one son, 4 grandchildren. I attribute my work ethic to being raised on the family dairy and beef farm in Maple, Wisconsin. I graduated from Northwestern High School and then attended the WITC in Superior back in the day for a welding. My work history includes Fraser Shipyard back in the early 1980s. I operated my own construction company for 25 years in Douglas and Bayfield County. Currently, I am an active member of a Carpenter Local 361 and have been employed by numerous union construction companies. In 2010, I was appointed as a supervisor for Lakeside Town of Lakeside and Town Lakeside Board, and was re-elected supervisor in 2011. I currently serve as chairperson for the Town of Lakeside. Vicki, my wife, is currently the town treasurer. I then ran for Douglas County Board of Supervisors and was elected in 2018 and continued to serve the residents of District 16. I currently serve the Land Development Committee, Transportation, Zoning, Tri-County Corridor Committees. We have many issues of importance to the 73rd District. Those include broadband, transportation and infrastructure needs, and make sure Line 5 project gets completed. We also have veterans issues and health care and for senior citizens.
Thank you, Candidate Lustry. And now the questions. The economy and inflation are on everyone's mind. What measures can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation? And what steps would you take personally as a member of the Assembly?
As being a Assembly member of the Wisconsin State Legislature and the Assembly, we have to look at our supply chain issues and to see how we can improve that, our infrastructure, getting our supplies and goods and services to the people. We also have to, that's a long question. We also have to look at our agriculture industry. Our rising food price and costs and everything else have to do with the rise in transportation, which is fuel. Our farmers are struggling with diesel fuel and fertilizer costs, which raise the price of food. Make sure we get our pipelines and our petroleum industry working together to make sure our fuel and for heating and for equipment and whatever still available and at a reasonable price. So that's basically where we have to start down there.
And thank you for your answer. A survey released last month by the private group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin has significant disparity along racial lines when it comes to civic participation. This follows other studies showing similar disparities in education and home ownership between blacks and whites. What would you do as a member of the Assembly to work to close this gap?
We'd have to work with the banking industry, I think, or financial institutions to make home ownership easier and available to everyone. That would be a good place to start. Interest rates and stuff like that, being they're going to be climbing at the moment. We want to make sure that those people are locked into a good interest rate. We want to make sure they have employment and things to pay off mortgages and to be part of the community. Right now, we have such a labor shortage and other things in education that are making a divide in between our two, between the races there. But we need to close that gap by probably having the legislature look at some specific legislation and then to help them easier to apply, easier to receive mortgages, receiver to be part of the community. We want everybody to be part of the community, and that's the neighbors and civic and everything else to work together to get to close that gap.
Okay, thank you. With this reversal of Roe v. Wade last month, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the states. Where do you envision the Wisconsin legislature taking the state in light of that decision, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal?
Especially in our area, where it remains legal, we're going to have, I'm sure, people going to Minnesota to receive that procedure or to have medical examinations and medical advice from there. At the state level, at the Assembly level, I think we right now, I haven't looked totally at the whole legislation on this thing, but right now I think there is mostly a ban on abortion. But my stance is I hope the legislature takes into consideration that we have rape, incest, mother's health, and a few other little things that we do need to, I think the legislature should look at and keep in place. I have seen and been in the areas of medical health and different things that where I've seen the devastation from criminal activity, from incest, from whatever, and it's such a burden on the innocent victims, and especially if the mother's health is involved, that's another area that the doctor, between the doctor and herself, should make that decision.
Thank you. And lastly, many, if not most, voters are frustrated by the gridlock and political parties refusing to work with one another. Should you succeed, retiring Democratic Representative Nick Milroy, what, if any, of his initiatives or his causes would you continue to support?
I would continue on Mr. Milroy's, or Representative Milroy's, legislative accomplishments there. I would keep a good eye on the environmental issues and a few other things that he did. Veterans issues are another one that he was a pretty good champion for. As to the gridlock and that stuff going on in the public political forum, we have to work together. I don't understand why we can't. There's always compromise to be made. There's always a give and take. There's always an avenue for compromise, for getting things done. We need to get things done, because if we don't get things done, we're just going to continue to have a little backward spiral here and not have a economy that's working, an environment that's working, and our residents of the 73rd District need to know that the state legislature or myself at the assembly level is going to keep their issues alive, and hopefully we can bring more support and financial support to the industry that we need. We need the oil and gas industry. We need our environment. We need our transportation and infrastructure taken care of. And hopefully I can work with the people in Madison and see if we can't get more of our funds and resources up here to help us help the residents of the 73rd District out.
Okay. We've been speaking to Scott Lustre of Lakeside. He's a candidate in the Republican primary for the 73rd District Assembly seat on the ballot on August 9th. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thank you very much for having me, Mr. Washington.
That again was Scott Lustre, a candidate in the August 9th Republican primary for the 73rd District seat in the Wisconsin Assembly. His opponent, Angie Sapik of Lake Nebagamon, was also invited on the program but declined to appear. Democratic candidate Laura Gapsky is unopposed in her party's primary. Next week, we've invited two more candidates, Chance Green and John Shea, who are facing off against each other in the Republican primary for the 74th district seat. They're looking to succeed Beth Myers, the Democratic incumbent who is retiring. Also in that race, a Democratic candidate, John Adams, is running unopposed. Coming up, it's haunting music born on a drive from Duluth to Ashland and drawing from a decades-old book of poetry by a native of Superior. We'll hear the story of Brittle Bright after this.
No. The fiend
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Brad Bombardier was a music professor, performer, and composer whose untimely death in 2019 at age 58 was mourned by many in the region. In addition to his teaching at the University of Minnesota Duluth and many other musical endeavors, he was a bassoonist with the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra and Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra, for whom he also wrote compositions. One of those was Brittle Bright, a setting of poems written by a Superior native that he scored for piano and voice a few months before his passing. Now, that work has been expanded in a symphonic version being premiered by the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra next Thursday, July 28th. Joining me from Duluth is Warren Friesen, the orchestra's founder and conductor, and from New York, mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott, who premiered the original version and will do so again for the new treatment. And as she'll tell you, she also was the impetus behind his creation. Welcome to Simply Superior, Warren and Sarah.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get to what is really a fascinating story of the creation of Brittle Bright and its new incarnation, let's hear a little bit about the two of you. Warren, first tell us about the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra.
So a chamber orchestra is basically just a small orchestra, and the instrumentation is variable. In this case, it's a string orchestra. And we were founded in 1987, and I was the founding conductor of the orchestra and have been with it since that time.
Sarah, as I mentioned, you premiered the first version of Brittle Bright for voice and piano. You perform, of course, in New York, where you live, and throughout the Midwest. Is this your first collaboration with the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra?
It is. It is my first time with the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra.
And what is your regular fare?
So I went to the University of Minnesota Duluth, where I've made these connections, got my master's there. Afterwards, I was in Minneapolis for a year, but then I moved to New York City, and that is my home base right now. And I've always come back to Ashland for their annual Messiah trip and kept in touch with Duluth, but I perform here now in New York City with groups such as the Opera Collective, which sings in the subway system, if you can at all imagine.
All right, you have to elaborate.
Yeah, you meet all sorts of people. Sometimes people are really enthralled, and sometimes people have no idea what to think of you. So it's really great to just be amongst everybody. And it's a great way for us to practice, and we bring opera to people just on their way to work.
All right, I got to ask, what's the most popular opera or opera role in the New York subway?
We do the drinking song, Libiamo, from Traviata. People like that. Like that a lot. They like the classic Carmen. A lot of times it's like, oh, I've heard that, and they don't know it's from.
And now there's people running around saying, you know, I heard that in the subway. So we are speaking with mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott and Warren Friesen, founder and conductor of the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra. They'll be performing Brittle Bright at UMD's Weber Music Hall on July 28th. All right, so let's jump right in with the story of Brittle Bright. I think you know it best, Sarah, since it begins with you hitching a ride from Duluth to Ashland with Brad Bombardier. Tell us the story of that ride.
Yes. So every holiday season, I perform with the Ashland Chamber Music Society at their Messiah sing-along. And I've done this for about 6 years and have made it a good excuse for me to come back every holiday season and seeing my family that's made up of a lot of friends in the area. So I needed a ride, just flown in from New York, where I'm based now. And Brad offered, and we're driving around in pitch dark of December. And he starts asking me about ranges of mezzo-sopranos. He was working on a piece for another mezzo. And I said, oh, you compose. I knew you were a bassoonist. I know he taught saxophone and music classes at the university, but I didn't know he was a composer. Mm-hmm. And so we started chatting because I had this idea to set a work of poetry to music. And he just took these poems and ran with it. He was so excited about it. And I just had a gut feeling he's the right composer for the job.
And tell us about the work of poetry. This wasn't just anything. Yeah. And it also has roots in our area.
Yes, it does. So the work of poetry is called Brittle Bright and written by Marian Thompson Van Steenwyck. Now, she is the mother of Linda Turpening, who lives in Duluth. Marian Thompson Van Steenwyck was from Superior. And Linda, I got to know through rehearsing with the Duluth Superior Symphony Orchestra. And Linda became a fast friend of mine. And she showed me these poems that her mom made. And she said this wonderful phrase, my mom always said she wrote and imagined them like music. And I thought, oh, it needs to be set to song. And so it just fits so well. And naturally, when I gave it to Brad, I didn't even give it to him. I need to back up. He actually went out and bought, I think Warren did too. We both went out and bought probably the last couple copies on a used book sale.
That's right. Right?
And just both fell in love with the poem. And it's so wonderful that it's able to happen even after all this turmoil. Unfortunately, losing Brad so unexpectedly and just how it's all coming to light. And we're able to make now the orchestrated version. Mm-hmm. We were lucky to make it with piano in 2019. And I feel so blessed that I was able to work on that with Brad directly. And after so much turmoil to now bring it back and to show that there is still life and it will be now in a new format.
When Sarah approached him with the Brittle Bright and writing a piece for piano and mezzo, he said, hey, I think I can do you one better. Yes, I'll do that. But let me talk to Warren Fries and see if I could do an orchestral version. And so he finished the piano vocal score, and that was performed, and he was working on a version for string orchestra, and then he passed away.
And this is the premiere of the string orchestra version.
This is the premiere of the string orchestra version, and Mina Kaiser, who is the other composer who had contributed many works for us in 30-plus years, and was a good friend of Brad's, said that she would be happy to take over the orchestration. So that's how that mm-hmm. happened.
All right. Well, we are speaking with Warren Friesen, founder and conductor of the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra, and mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott. They'll be performing Brittle Bright, the orchestral version, I should say, of a work adapted from a book of poetry that stems back to our area in the 1930s. As we're recording this, the premiere, of course, is yet to come. So let's hear some of the original version. Sarah, what would you recommend to start?
Now That the Play is Over.
Okay, here is Now That the Play is Over from Brittle Bright, poetry by Marian Thompson Van Steenwyck, set to music by Brad Bombardier, Jacqueline Holstrom on piano, and sung by our guests, mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott. And that was Now That the Play is Over from Brittle Bright, poetry by Marion Thompson Van Steenwyck, set to music by Brad Bombardier and sung by our guest, Sarah Knott. We are speaking with Sarah and also Warren Friesen of the Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra, which will be premiering the orchestral version of the work, completed by Mina Kaiser, and performed this Thursday, July 28th, at the University of Minnesota Duluth Weber Music Hall. So, Warren, Brad Bombardier was so involved in the local music scene, from your group to the DSSO to the Big Time Jazz Orchestra and a lot more. Tell me about him as a composer for the Chamber Orchestra, and also Mina Kaiser, who shared that role and assumed it after his passing.
Yeah, it was a terrible loss to the community, but none of us were expecting it. As far as we all knew, he was in good health. Brad had been with the orchestra since its founding, really. And I had always been very, very interested in local talent, including, people like Sarah, who are locally affiliated, even though they're living elsewhere. I was interested in having an orchestra that was intensively local, but also had a global vision as well. And I really favored composers in the area. And that came primarily to two composers. One is Mina Kaiser and Brad Bombardier. Brad probably in our 30-plus years probably contributed over 20 new works and also helped me with rearranging. And he also served as principal bassoonist, sometimes a saxophonist, and also as arranger if I needed anything orchestrated.
So let's hear another. And we're not giving away or taking away anything from the performance next week, because this is only the piano and voice version, which should whet your appetite for the orchestrated treatment. So here is If Someday You Should Come, from the 2019 premiere of Brittle Bright by Brad Bombardier, Jacqueline Holstrom on piano and mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott.
Oh,
And that was If Someday You Should Come, from the 2019 premiere of Brittle Bright by Brad Bombardier, mezzo-soprano Sarah Knott with Jacqueline Hostrom on piano. Warren Friesen, now that we have whetted appetites for the orchestral version next week at Weber Music Hall, how can we get tickets?
The concert is at 7:30 on Thursday, July 28th, and tickets are available at the door. I think that's probably the best way for people to do it. We also have a Facebook page. Facebook is a good place to reach us.
And I see that's quite simple. Just go to Facebook and type in Lake Superior Chamber Orchestra. We'll go out with one more selection from the 2019 version for piano and voice, Quietness. Sarah Knott and Warren Friesen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good
talking
to you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, there was a pretty serious accident on the road last week involving an off-duty Superior police sergeant.
Yeah, that's right. A sergeant with the Superior Police Department was arrested last Friday after an off-duty crash that killed one man and left two other people injured, one of which, an infant, has since also died. Police say that the sergeant was drunk driving. Sergeant Greg Swanson is facing a felony charge of homicide by intoxicated use of a vehicle, and the Superior Telegram reported that Swanson was driving when he struck a disabled sedan that had no lights on, according to the criminal complaint. And a man was killed, and a woman, an infant, and a two-year-old child were also in the car, and the infant has since died as a result of the crash. And a deputy with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office at the scene reported that Swanson's eyes were glossy and bloodshot, and that there was a strong odor of alcohol coming off of him. And it looks like more charges may be filed against Swanson. An initial appearance has been set in his case for later this month, and he has since been released on a $15,000 bond.
And the additional charges may include the death of the infant, I believe.
That's right.
Well, clearly a heartrending tragedy for the family. On an enlightening note in Superior, the city is moving a step closer to figuring out what to do with the old Carnegie Library, or at least who's going to own it.
That's right. The Superior City Council voted 7-3 on Tuesday to buy the Carnegie Library in Superior for $175,000. The building has sat vacant for roughly 30 years, and it's in need of repairs, including a new roof. And at the meeting on Tuesday, councilors approved the purchase from Andy Osterlund, who owns an architectural firm. And the decision on Tuesday also capped investment in the library at $325,000. And the city is also required to put it up for sale in about 18 months. And any funds used for improvements on the building would be coming from funding the city received under the American Rescue Plan Act. And if you remember, the city set aside around, I believe, $3.5 million for historic preservation as part of the money they received earlier this year. And, you know, the city is one of roughly 60 Wisconsin communities that receive grants from Andrew Carnegie to build public libraries. You know, Carnegie was a major philanthropist at the time. He donated a total of roughly $40 million to build close to 1,700 libraries across the country. And if I'm not mistaken, Superior's was the first Carnegie Library to be built in Wisconsin in 1901.
All right. Rick, on the Minnesota side, the state has some sobering numbers, if you will, on drug overdoses.
Yes, it does, Robin. Minnesota saw a record number of drug overdose deaths in 2021. And most of those fatalities were associated with the powerful synthetic opioid painkiller called fentanyl. With more than 1,286 overdose deaths, 2021 saw a 22% increase from 2020. That's according to the Minnesota Department of Health in a report that was released last week. Last year had twice as many deaths as the state saw 10 years ago, and numbers have climbed significantly since 2018 when there were just over 600. Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm called the trend alarming, but said there were steps the state can take, including expanding access to overdose-reversing medications. Often illicit drugs can be laced with fentanyl, and that's become more common in many street drugs over the past decade and has been attributed to a national surge in overdoses. The synthetic opioid painkiller is up to 50 times stronger than heroin, and a dose as small as 2 milligrams can be lethal in an adult. Now, while the 2021 deaths were in large part due to opioids, Minnesota saw large increases from 2020 for several stimulant drugs like cocaine and meth. The number of opioid deaths increased 35%, while cocaine deaths were up 85%. Meanwhile, the number of deaths from commonly prescribed anti-anxiety medications such as Xanax or Valium was down 19%.
All right. Well, on the economic front, there's a study looking at the impact of the Enbridge Line 3 project.
Yes, there is. Since the replacement of Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline began in 2017, there's been a significant increase in economic activity has been experienced across the region. And according to a study that was commissioned by the Area Partnership for Economic Expansion, during peak Line 3 construction in 2021, employment reached over 14,000 jobs. Enbridge reportedly contributed more than $1.7 billion in employee wages and benefits, over $2.2 billion in value-added spending, and generated more than $5 billion in new spending over the project's life. This study that was commissioned by APEX is a private sector-led business development engine for Northeast Minnesota and Northwest Wisconsin. The study did not take into account any social or environmental impacts of the project. Its purpose was to solely estimate the economic impacts of replacing three segments of Line 3. Nearly half of the project's construction laborers were residents of the 16-county project area. In addition to the construction laborers themselves, Enbridge employed engineers, right-of-way agents, environmental monitors, project managers, and construction supervisors. About 54% of those employed for the construction project were sourced from outside of the study area. Enbridge's Line 3 crude oil pipeline was originally installed in the 1960s to transport crude oil from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, to Superior, Wisconsin. It was put into service in 1968. And in the United States, the replacement project stretched through 14 miles of Wisconsin in August of 2017, 13 miles in North Dakota from August and September of 2020, and finally 337 miles in Minnesota in December 2020. The pipeline was put into service on October 1st, 2021. Opponents of the pipeline have long said it violates indigenous treaty rights, threatens to contaminate water with risk of oil spills, contributes to climate change because it strengthens reliance on fossil fuels and exposes communities next to the construction projects to human trafficking. The full study and overview can be found at apexgetsbusiness.com.
Okay. And finally, on a variety of fronts, the Downtown Task Force in Duluth has made a series of recommendations.
Earlier this week, in a news conference held at the recently renovated Lake Superior Plaza, the Downtown Task Force released its initial recommendations to revitalize downtown Duluth and promote public safety. Among the recommendations are a neighborhood watch program, better prosecution of petty crimes, and a fund to inspire public art projects. Further down the road, the city needs to look at repurposing vacant downtown office space for housing and conduct a study on how the Central Business District may look in 5 years. Mayor Emily Larson announced the 14-member task force in March, and the group has held a handful of meetings since then. Their work is expected to continue into September. The mayor said the city plans to work with the Duluth area YMCA and employment partners to staff the walking groups, which will serve as an extra set of eyes and ears along sidewalks and skywalks and peak times. Officials said they'd also like to encourage public art and entertainment projects. Co-chair Christy Stokes, president of the Downtown Duluth Greater Downtown Council, said her organization is looking to organize more entertainment opportunities. That includes Lake Superior Plaza, where the council is launching a Power Up the Plaza initiative that includes free coffee and music from 10 to 11 a.m. every Thursday through August. Stokes of the Downtown Council also will work with businesses to determine if there are opportunities to expand space for opportunities such as outdoor dining and busking, and work with city officials to ease any permitting challenges. Larson did note that downtown will likely never see a pre-pandemic level of office workers again as work-from-home policies become the norm, but there's always a need for more affordable housing.
All right. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And finally today, if you've noticed an explosion of concerts and musical performances, Rick just mentioned busking in downtown Duluth, it's probably not your imagination. It might be attributed to musicians finally getting out after the pandemic restrictions, especially at the summer venues in the area. That includes big names, even quirky ones like Weird Al Yankovic, who played at the Deck recently. And if you missed that, there's another accordionist, this one world-class and a bit more serious, but also fun. Michael Bridge will be appearing at the World of Accordions Museum and Arts Center in downtown Superior at 7 p.m. on Monday. Tickets are still available at worldofaccordions.org. And if you want to know just how good he is, here's his music to take us out. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.